doctrine, looking at who God is, His qualities, His nature, His character. And we have learned a lot about who He is back, which feels like forever ago. Back in September, we started with the conversation of how God is love and how all things that He does is driven by His nature, that is love. We moved into a conversation of holiness and how God is holy and the implications that that has on our life, and how God has solved the problem of His holiness and our sinfulness through His Son, Jesus Christ. We went from there into a conversation of God's justice, which is an incredibly different version of justice than yours and mine, and how we play those things out in our life. We have come to realize that God is all-knowing, that He is all-powerful, that He is all-present. We spent weeks working through those themes through September and then early October. We shifted our conversation around those qualities to kind of His person, where we spent 4 weeks talking about Trinity. Week one was God is three persons and yet one, and one and yet three. And for many of you that morning, you're like, I'm really confused. And I would say, welcome to the team around some of the complexities of Trinity and what that is and what it isn't. The 4 weeks after that, we spent some time talking about what the Father is, the Son, and the Spirit. And this morning, we're taking a bit of a turn away from His qualities and person, and now we're going to begin a two-week conversation around His work, because God actually does stuff. It goes beyond a nature and a character and qualities. He actually does things. And this morning, week one of two, we're going to be looking at God, the Creator. And next week, as we begin Advent, we're going to be highlighting God, the Redeemer. And these are the two major activities that God does for His people, for His world, for His glory, and for our joy. So this morning, we begin looking at this whole theme of how God is, in fact, the Creator of everything. Before I begin, I do know this. This service, unlike our first service, tends to trend a bit younger in age, which means we're dealing with a lot of folks my age and younger. And if you are my age, 38 and younger, some of these concepts you find difficult to grasp. That God has created everything from nothing in 7 days, and on the story of creation goes, and we are confronted with a world that is enlightened, that is driven by science in so many ways. And you will find this morning, hopefully, profitable. And at the same time, I want to confront you with some of your ideas on issues of morality, on issues of creation. And the goal is this, and I'll kind of all the cards on the table. The goal is that you will see clearly that when you remove God as creator, everything is up for grabs. Everything is up for grabs. I sat through the classrooms where I would argue, because I tend to be that guy in the classroom with my biology professor, which cost me grades. I didn't argue well. I certainly didn't reflect the goodness of God as I dealt with my teachers through high school, through university. I was belligerent. I was mean-spirited. This morning, hopefully, I'm not that way as we work through this conversation with you on these things. But I'm hoping that as you leave here, this will generate conversation in your heart and mind on these two things particularly, because as my generation grows older, things are not just up for grabs. And we, my generation, is seeing things get played out in record pace, record speed, that bring calamity upon human beings in tragic ways. And hopefully you'll kind of see how these things kind of line up as we work through. All right, we're going to get started. Genesis 1:1 is where it all begins. And it's a simple verse that says, in the beginning, God created. 5 simple words, and yet incredibly profound, that shape everything in this world, including our daily life. I want to throw this up on the screen, and this is where I begin to confront the 38-year-old and younger. If you're older in this camp, I'm going to confront you too. So let's move into this space. Most people in our culture, and I would say a large segment of our congregation here this morning, most people in our culture are unaware that their values connected to living are in direct conflict with what they believe about the world's origins. I'll say it another way. How you live makes you a hypocrite to how you think the world came to be. And you're actually an active agent against some of your own convictions about how and where the world came from. So let's move in. For the Christ follower that has been in this kind of recently or a long time, we know that the scriptures tell us that God is in fact the creator of everything. The sun, the moon, the stars, the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, every living creature that moves along the ground, every human being that has ever lived. All of this is a result, is a product of our God's handiwork on display. I want to read to you just three verses from the scriptures that reveal this to be true. Some of you, you're like, yeah, I already know that. Others, you're like, nah, I'm not buying it yet. So let's kind of work through this together. Colossians 1, 15 to 16 reads this way. The Son, speaking of Christ, the Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. Romans 11:36, for in him and through him and for him are all things. To him be the glory forever. And then Nehemiah 9:6, you alone are the Lord. You made the heavens, even the highest heavens, and all of their starry hosts, the earth and all that is on it, the seas and all that is in them. You give life to everything, and the multitudes of the heavens worship you. These are just three of literally dozens and dozens and dozens of passages that reveal from Scripture that the God in whom we worship and serve and talk about all the time is in fact the creator of everything that we see and feel and experience, even things that we cannot see that are at play in this world. For this crowd here this morning, it's kind of a mixed bag. Some of you are like, I already know this. I know. So let's just work through that. You might get sharper in how you talk about it. And then there's the other group where you're like, I don't really know. Like, I believe that Jesus is who he said he is, but I really can't get on board with all the other stuff. Well, here, I'll lean into you. The fact that Jesus has said all the other stuff, you should consider all the other stuff. When Jesus says, I made everything, I'll take his word for it. Why? Because he got up from the grave. I tend to believe the man who dies, is buried, begins to do what dead bodies do for 3 days, and then gets up and says, I am the Lord. He has my attention. And I'll follow and listen to what he has to say on matters of creation. So in this crowd, I know that there's these two camps. But I want to kind of create these spaces that I suspect for some of you, you've been there. How many of you, just by show of hands, have stood out on not like downtown Charlottetown where the natural light you really don't see because of streetlights, but you're out in a dark field somewhere on a clear, starry night and you look up at the stars and you are captivated with what you see? How many of you kind of, you're like, oh my land, this is amazing. And there's a part, even for the cynic, where you're like, someone, like, who thought of this? Like, someone has to be the cause behind all that we see with our eyes. Or you've stood out on Brackley Beach and you've looked down the shoreline and you're like, this is awesome. Like, how does this beauty come from chance and calamity and like, there's this tension that it creates just when we observe things with our eyes that has to go beyond simple mathematics. Yes, mathematics are a part of it, but it's something that's so far profound and majestic and beautiful that it invokes in us this response of someone has to be behind this. Someone has to be the thought, the brain, the magician, if you will, that has brought forth all that we see. David writes it this way in Psalm 19. We started our service with this passage. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they reveal knowledge. They have no speech. They use no words. No sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out to all the earth, to the outer ends of the world. I can talk a lot about how God is the creator. And for a large chunk of you, you already know this. So I want to move through that part very, very quickly. And I want to move into another part. Because woven into the passages of how God is the creator, even the longtime Christ follower sometimes forgets that beyond the fact that he is the creator, he's created things with a purpose, with a design in mind. He doesn't do this at random or arbitrarily. He creates everything with a purpose. When he creates the sun and moon and water and land, there is a purpose behind why he has done this. When he creates the fish, the birds, the plants, the animals, there is a reason why he has done this. This shouldn't shock any one of us, because we, human beings, we are created in the image of God, and as we create stuff, there is a reason why. Even for the guy that goes to the garage and he's not really sure what he's doing and he can't articulate to his wife what he's trying to do, like, we're out there for a reason. It could be just to get away from the kids. There's a reason why we are going to create something. When my children strip their beds against their mother's wishes of all their sheets and pillows to make tents, you ever do that? There's a reason for that. They want to have fun. And we walk in and we play with them for a little bit. And we're like, oh, this is a lot of work. And they put all the beds back together. There's a reason for everything that we do as we create. Even if we're completely kind of foggy around some of the motivations as to why we do what we do, there is a reason that drives it all. God is no different. He had a design in mind when he created us. And if we stop for a moment, whether you are a Christ follower or not, whether you believe in God who created all things from nothing, whether you're there or not, I want us to stop and just reflect upon human behavior and isolate that and work through some of these things. Have you ever wondered why that across the board, human beings loudly respond and say, rape is wrong? Like, why is it that regardless of culture and time, that behavior is wrong? There isn't anyone that I've ever met who thinks that that's a good idea or a good behavior. And yet it's intrinsically woven into the human being that that action is awful. Have you ever wondered why humanity across the board, by and large, says pedophilia is dangerous and dark and wrong and should not be done? Where does this intrinsic sense of right and wrong come from on these issues? How many of us have watched the Syrian refugee crisis unfold and say, that is tragic? It doesn't matter where you're from, when you watch homes be destroyed, people forced out of where they live, the human heart responds with a voice that says, that is tragic. Where does that come from? When we watch children die of starvation, our hearts respond and say, that's awful. Why is it that these things are shared across time and culture to be wrong things that we witness with our own eyes? We can highlight good things. Why is it that people tend to celebrate generous acts of generosity? Whether you know Christ or not, when someone donates something significant, that action tends to be celebrated regardless of your theological perspective. Where does that come from? Why is it that things like forgiveness are deemed to be a noble quality in a human being? Where does that come from? Where does it come from? Why is it that we as people push for human rights? Why is it that we have voices that say it is a good thing for men and women to be treated the same, for the same work? Like, where do the basis of human rights come from? These are all things that reveal something about the designer, the creator of the world. The answer to the question of where it comes from is very simple. God, believe it or not, has created us and has designed us to live in a certain way. He had a purpose in mind when he creates men and women. And despite our fallen state, despite the sin and brokenness that we all feel and experience, despite how much we might be confused about his design, the design still rests upon us. Which is why when we see atrocities, the voice speaks out to say, that is wrong. It comes from this design, from the designer, to say there are things at play that are right and wrong, that are grounded in his creation and his design. Just on a sidebar, do you find it fascinating that we as human beings have adapted a language to say that is inhumane? Have you ever used that phrase or heard someone talk in that way? Kind of like that's inhumane. But when you parallel, like, because if I kind of enter into the scientific, like we're just animals like all the other animals. We're no different and to be viewed no different than other created beings or other living organisms. Why is it that when we watch the Discovery Network and watch a cheetah eat an old gazelle who's almost dying, we're like, that's sad, but that's just how it goes. We don't go to the mall and watch like a 38-year-old man who is ripped find the 97-year-old lady who can hardly move and say, it's just animals being animals. Poor thing. And then we go on shopping. No, we say, that's inhumane. We laugh at that, but this is how we speak. It's weird because my grandma, who's 90, is here this morning. Like in this space, there's not a lot of time left for her. Like where it's like in the Discovery Network world, the strongest lion cheetah will hunt down and kill the weak, the old, the sick, the young. And we look at it and say, that's just nature being nature. I remember we were watching the show about these Alaskan birds that are kind of birthed every spring, and it's this beautiful song in the background, and our kids were watching it with us one night, and Lauren, everyone's like, oh, that's so cute, and all of a sudden the music changed, and there was this little fox head that like popped up from this little hole, and Lauren's like, what's that fox going to do? And I'm like, wait and see, and we watch this fox like hunt down chicks who couldn't defend themselves or their life depended on it. And the next scene was the fox walking away with this dark kind of music over Discovery Network with like six baby chicks in his mouth. And they're all crying, and I'm trying to explain, well, we don't act that way as human beings because we think there's something intrinsically wrong about that, and yet when it comes to nature, we just, this is what it is. Things are different when you begin the conversation around human life versus other animal life. Why is that? Why is that? The only explanation of why is that there are some actions that are truly bad and evil and wrong, and then there are some behaviors that are truly good and right. And they are all connected to God's creation, his design, and purpose. Paul writes it this way in Romans 1. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made. As a human being, as a culture, as a people, we are often in times practicing God's design, and we're unaware that we're practicing God's design, and we think that we've made it up. It's quite comical for me. As I watch the news, as I read articles, as I engage different journals, where like one of my favorite examples is when you read Fortune 500 business managers, they talk about how important it is to take breaks from their work. That they find they come back to their office more focused, more energized, rejuvenated, and how important it is as young CEOs, as young professional businessmen and women, to build in breaks from your work so that you can come back to work sharper and better. And everyone buys their book. And I'm like, where's that come from? One day in rest, God created for us to rest as he rested. We are unaware of all of these rhythms that we adopt and get played out in our life, and we don't know where it comes from. It's not from Bill Gates. It's not from other businessmen, businesswomen that we read about. These are things that God has intrinsically woven into us, and we practice them unaware of where they came from in the first place. Now, I'm going to go into a space here. We'll just go here. A bit of a hard turn. Do you know what the natural outworking is of a world that removes God as creator? Do you know what that world's like? Terrible. Chaos, bedlam, fill in the blank. And I'll give you some examples of how we can steer conversations with people that we love into profound conversations of faith. How many of you have ever had a conversation with a family member who does not believe that God has created everything? How many of you have a family member? You might be that family member this morning. Okay, I know there's more than you. That's your line, that's fine. When you're in a conversation with them about faith or God or creation, steer the conversation gently on issues of morality. If they don't think there's a God or that he's created everything, steer it on issues of morality and say, do you think rape's wrong? Do you think starvation's wrong? Do you think lying's kind of right, wrong? Like, do you think, and press them on some of these things. Do you think child slavery's wrong? Do you think prostitution, like when human beings are owned by other humans, do you think these things are wrong? And watch them answer it. Because chances are they'll say yes. If they say no, you should unfriend them. If that's how they're going to interact with you, that's a whole other conversation. But if they say yes, and chances are they will on these behaviors, listen in to why they think these things are wrong. And it's bizarre listening to someone describe something on absolute issues of morality when there isn't a stopping mechanism known as God the Creator. It's bizarre. In fact, it's an impossible conversation to actually win that debate if there isn't a creator or a designer who has made things with a purpose in mind. If it's just us making things up for us for the betterment of human society or culture, that is quite comical. A couple weeks ago, we used the example of how some of our leaders right now are talking about our shared Canadian values or our kind of shared values of humanity. I'm from a little village of Hillsborough, and the shared values of that community to that of Toronto are very different. Neither one of them are right or wrong. They're just very different. To talk as though there is this group of values that exists in humanity in and of themselves is one of the funnest conversations that I love to play with people's thinking on. Because in that world, I can do whatever I want, whenever I want, because I am God. And I don't care what it does to you and your family, because I am solely interested in me and mine, and I will do whatever is required to get mine. If there is not a God, all conversations of morality go out the window incredibly quick. Incredibly quick. Next one. How many of you have a family or a friend that is kind of in that space of the evolutionary camp? Like that through time processes, the world kind of made itself to be through these kind of scientific equations. If you have someone like that in your life, you might be that person. Again, steer the conversation with this person on issues of morality. From my days at school, in high school and university, I remember the dominant conversation was the whole thing around the survival of the fittest. That through time, nature has a way, through natural selection, the one species or the species that can adapt the fastest, they will kind of move on forward, and the ones that are weaker and less adaptable will die off, and thus the product that creation creates from itself, from these laws, will be in fact the supreme creations, if you will, because they have proven to be the most adaptable through the course of time. If you're in that camp at all, I would simply say, why would you ever help poor people then? Why would you ever come alongside someone who is in need of something? Because if you do, you are in fact working against your beliefs about creation. Because the evolutionary process says the species that cannot adapt to its environment, it is good for that species to die off. So when it comes to issues of genocide, why would we ever speak with a moral voice to say that is wrong? Because according to that premise, maybe there's some species that just need to die off. Because this is how the world functions. This is how the world moves forward. This is how the world cleanses itself to ensure that the best will always remain. It's interesting that what we believe about creation shapes our entire life, and for most people, they live in direct conflict with what they believe about how it all started. It's very fun for me to engage in debate with people on some of these points, because when you remove a creator, everything is up for grabs. Everything is up for grabs. The natural outworking and outcomes of a world that does not have a creator, it's very simple. If God doesn't create, if there is no design, and if there is no design, then there is no such thing as right and wrong. It's just made up stuff. Just made up stuff. And the further that God is pushed to the sidelines, the crazier it's going to get. The further that he is pushed to the sidelines, the crazier it's going to get. But if God did create, and if he continues to create, and there is a design, and that there is a purpose, well, then there is right and wrong, and that there is a purpose for our life and living. So to move back into the main point of our conversation, if we pause and reflect for a moment on what the Scripture teaches about these things and what humanity itself reveals about these things, there is, quite honestly, no ability to deny the fact that God has created things with a design and with a purpose, and we practice it whether we know him or not in all kinds of areas of our life. And this leads us to our final point this morning. Since God is the creator, and since he created with a design in mind, and this is where I want you to lean in close, the only chance for you and for me, the only chance for you to find and experience peace and joy now and forever is for you and me to align our life with his design and purpose. The only chance that my kids have for peace and joy and rest and happiness is for them to align their life to God's design and purposes. Moses, when he was about to die, gave a speech to the nation of Israel as he was kind of laddering the torch off to Joshua, the 38-year-old of the crowd. And Moses says this, it's on the screen, it's from Deuteronomy 30. And if there's one thing that Moses has come to realize, is that God has a way of life in mind, and we flourish in it. This is what he writes. I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. For I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in obedience to him, and to keep his commands, decrees, and laws. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you. But if your heart turns away, and you are not obedient, and if you are drawn away to bow down to other gods and worship them, I declare to you this day, you will certainly be destroyed. I want to pause there for a moment and say this to you. As a pastor, as your pastor, as someone who loves you greatly, my greatest heartaches and pain come from watching you and me make decisions that are outside of God's design, because I know how it ends for you. And I know how it ends for me. It's just death upon death upon death. And 5 years later, we'll have a coffee. And you'll say, I didn't see it working out this way. And I'm like, I know. We never think that it works out this way. But on this particular day, against the witnesses of heaven and earth, we opted to say, I'm going to do things my way. I know best. I am my own God. I am my own king. I am my own queen. And I think I know best. I'm going to do this. And we are unaware that we bring death into our lives. And it ruins, it kills, it destroys over and over and over again. Let's go finish. Moses again. This day I call the heavens. I call the heavens and the earth as witnesses against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life so that you and your children may live, that you would love the Lord your God, that you would listen to his voice, and that you would hold fast to him, for the Lord is your life. For the Lord is your life. When we align our life to his plan, to his purposes, this is where we flourish. And we all long to flourish. There might be false flourishing for seasons when we do things outside of God's design, but I'm old enough and I've been doing this long enough that I've seen it all crash down on the best and brightest of them all. When we opt to do things outside of the design, it's awful. So what is his design? Well, this is the most important question that you will ever deal with. How did God create us to live? If you spend any amount of time here, we talk about this every week, every other week. In Genesis 1 and Genesis chapter 2, these passages reveal an awfully lot about our God and his design for you and me. How he created us to live in relationship with God himself, how he created us to live in relationship with others, how he created us to live, to be in right relationship with this physical created world, how he created us to experience a self-esteem that we just long for. Long for. Make no mistake, in Genesis 1, 2, there is much to be said around God's design for life and living. It's a design that God looked upon at the end of creation and said, "This is good. This is good." Good for whom? Good for you and good for me. Apart from God's good regardless. It's good for you. It's good for me. And we flourish in his design. Seems so simple, so easy. But it's not as simple and as easy as we might think. Because anyone who sets out to align their life by God's design, they will quickly find out that they don't have what it takes on their own to do it. This is the cycle. You will try hard. You will work hard. There'll be moments of progress. And then you'll step through this massive season of catastrophic loss and suffering, only to do it all over again, to do it all over again, to do it all over again, to do it all over again. And then you die. Merry Christmas. No matter how hard we try, we will always fail to live by God's design on our own strength. Which leads to the question of, well, then what hope is there for us? If God is the creator, if he created with a design and purpose in mind, and I can't live this design or purpose on my own, what hope do I have? Well, next week, we go into the second thing that God does, and that is he redeems. And this is where we answer this question of, if there is a design, I can only get in on it rightly when I come to understand the fact that God redeems. I'm going to ask Gordon and team to come back. They're going to lead us in one final song. Next Sunday morning is going to be kind of the kickoff into our Advent season. There's some folks being baptized because they have come to experience God's redeeming love in their life. Some of you, I know, are wrestling through that decision for yourself to be baptized. And if you're in that space this morning, please let me know. There's a sign-up sheet. We'll be in contact with you out in the foyer. Just be here next Sunday as we begin our Advent season together. Because there's going to be personal stories all the way through our Advent series. It's going to be a great season together as we celebrate Christ and what he has done through his birth, his life, and through his death and resurrection. Let's pray, and then Gordon will lead us in a song. Dear Heavenly